broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the network refuses to use. No doubt continues now. Ladies and gentlemen, hard-hitting talk at your fingertips always on your radio. This is the broadcast for August 3rd in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is hour two of two. Last hour, we talked in big detail with our buddy Cliff Kincaid, president of America's Survival, USASurvival.org. And we talked about Absolute Proof, Mike Lindell's event coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you right now, I pray Mike Lindell doesn't get schnookered, but I think he's going to. Sam investigates the Lindell event. Something is not right. Doesn't add up. Simply doesn't make any sense. That's the bottom line and the upshot. This hour, though, totally different topic. We got our buddy Patrick Simmons with us. National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. Find out if you live in a right-to-work state, ladies and gentlemen. Righttowork.org. Patrick, welcome back to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Good morning, Sam. Thanks.
Oh, man, there's so much going on in the news. It is crazy. Now that we've had Joe Biden in office, what, a little over 6 months now, right? 7 months?
Yeah.
Things have kind of ran off the rails when it comes to the National Labor Relations Board and everything else. They seem to be on a bender, huh?
Yeah, they're, of course, the Senate's was trying to get out of town, and one of the final things they did was rubber stamp a couple NLRB nominees, and hasn't caused trouble yet, but it will start causing a lot of problems really soon, trying to push unions on workers who don't want them and undermine the individual rights of workers who are trying to not associate with a union, which is, of course, we think that should be their choice if they want to or not. It shouldn't be forced by a federal agency, which is what has happened and is unfortunately what's likely to happen more as Biden's people get more and more control over the National Labor Relations Board.
What I find interesting is, for example, we thought with the Amazon thing that, hey, you know what, people are going to reject the unions, but they're coming back in a manipulated way to force the unions on people even there.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. You have this leak last night. This is not, as far as I can tell, any official decision. This is some low-level staffer making a recommendation to his boss about what they should decide. And it looks like they're going to say Amazon, by helping to get a mailbox installed, made it too easy to vote by mail. And somehow that was the reason why the workers overwhelmingly voted over 2-1 margin against the union. And it's pretty wild. It shows how they want these things to work. The union is, basically, their position is, the Amazon shouldn't be able to campaign. Workers shouldn't be able to vote at their workplace. They should only be able to vote when it's more difficult and where we can go to them and go to their house and say, here's the ballot, fill it out. We'll send it back in for you. This is all done in mail-in voting. And it's pretty outrageous that there are, I think it's fewer than 20% of the total eligible workers voted for the union. Like I said, over 2-1 who did vote, voted against unionization. The union brought in, Joe Biden did a video, Bernie Sanders came down, they had celebrities come in. And yet, despite all that, these workers looked around, said, this is a good job for my community. And whatever this union is offering, I don't want it. And now, the union, with the help of the National Labor Relations Board, is going to try and overturn their vote. It's pretty outrageous.
Now, what I find interesting is it's almost like the National Labor Relations Board is undermining the will of the people here blatantly. So that seems to be actionable, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what they're trying to do. And I suspect part of what's going on here is, so currently the Trump There's a majority on the National Labor Relations Board through the end of August that are the one of the Trump nominees. His term expires, as I mentioned. A former SEIU lawyer was just confirmed by the Senate to fill that seat. So at the end of August, that switches. And what it does is it flips the majority from 3-2 Trump appointees who have not been perfect, but they've certainly been more fair and more neutral. And suddenly you're going to have three Biden-selected NLRB members running the National Labor Relations Board. And I suspect that the union and Amazon union officials are trying to kind of slow this down so that it gets there after Biden takes full control, and then they can just rubber stamp it, rerun the election. What they really would like, because we know from this is in the PRO Act, which is the top priority for organized labor, for the AFL-CIO and for all the big unions in Congress, and it's already passed the House. Of course, they want to dismantle the filibuster so they can shove it through the Senate. But one of the aspects in the PRO Act is if a union loses an election like this, currently, the fix is they run another election. But what the PRO Act says is if the union loses the election, but not the other way around, only if the union loses, the National Labor Relations Board can not only declare that election invalid, but they can just declare the union the winner. So if this happens under the PRO Act and a Biden NLRB, they probably have already said, nope, union's in. We don't care that two workers voted against the union for every one who did vote for it. Irrelevant. We're going to install this union in power. It's going to be empowered to put a contract on all these workers, no matter the fact that 80% of them didn't vote for this particular union. And it's just another demonstration of how the union movement and organized labor purports to talk, you know, speak for workers and be about what workers want. But so much of what they do is about top-down government granted power to the detriment of the individual rights of the actual rank and file workers.
And this is an example where the government has this, in my opinion, erroneous notion that, you know what, inherently unions are good and necessary. So much so that, you know what, the people don't even really know what's good for them. We must override the will of the people for their own good. That's what government usually thinks. But when it comes to unions, I mean, it's inherently so, where they just think there's no other choice. That's the way it's got to be. And they just triple down on this narrative that, hey, unions are good and unions have to be. And they do this in the public sector, too. But they're pushing this private sector wise stuff. But that's where it comes from, right?
Yeah. And it's already embedded in federal labor law. I mean, this is, the National Labor Relations Act comes out of FDR and the New Deal. And originally they tried to basically create cartels for the various industries, and they were going to have industry wide boards with unions and the companies, and they'd get together, and that got thrown out by the U.S. Supreme Court. And then they came back with the National Labor Relations Act, which does have some language about workers' right to associate and that type of thing, which of course should at least inherently include the right not to associate. But it also has language about, encouraging what they call collective bargaining, monopoly bargaining, where a union gets power over all the workers, even those who don't want union representation. And that's in the law. And of course, the National Labor Relations Board, because of the way it's set up, it sometimes is increasingly aggressive on the promoting union power part of the mission of the National Labor Relations Act. And sometimes it does a better job on the freedom of association side. But there's no question where Joe Biden stands and what would happen if the PRO Act passes Congress, which, like I said, is the, just this drastic wish list of union power and the Amazon election, how that would play out. Obviously it's bad now that they're trying to overturn this vote. Overwhelming. It's hard to, you can't lose sight of the fact that these workers, they understood what was going on. They heard the pitch. They heard the president of the United States did a video talking to them about why they should join the union. And despite all that, they said,
let me stop you there. No. That's why I'm saying the government has this inherent idea. Why would the president be in the middle of an Amazon discussion about unions? The president of the United States should have nothing to do with this. He should be a guy saying, look, we love the free association that America offers. We were here as a government to honor contracts. And, you know, let the people decide what they want. I have nothing to do with that. Why would he roll down there and be part of that in the first place?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly a big part of it is, of course, union bosses spend a lot of money on politics and lobbying. You know, I think saw some studies show it at, you know, around $2 billion every election cycle. When you add up the dues money, and people forget the biggest portion of union political spending comes from general treasury funds, which are funded by union dues and fees. And that means in non-right to work states, money from workers who would be fired if they didn't pay. And unions admit, and this is in their own filings, and if you start digging through them, you realize that they're undercounting drastically because there's a whole lot of things that get miscategorized and everything else. But you're looking at $1.4 billion in 2019 and 20 that they're spending, forced dues included, on union political and lobbying activities. That buys them a lot of power, including with Joe Biden.
When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, with Patrick Simmons, we have several cases in the news that we want to kind of mention really quick. California, Chicago, and more. These people are on a bender, I'm telling you. It's crazy. Patrick Simmons with us, righttowork.org. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live.
Abby Johnson was once director of a Planned Parenthood clinic in Bryan, Texas. After a moral crisis, she quit, and now she campaigns against what she once endorsed.
They implement abortion quotas in all of their clinics.
What do you mean, quotas?
You have to perform a certain number of abortions every month. One of the reasons that I left...
Are they explicit about that?
Yes. It's in your budget, right there on the line item. One of the reasons I left Planned Parenthood was because in a budget meeting, I was told to double that abortion quota. And for me, as someone who had spoken to the media and had said, you know, we're about reducing the number of abortions, we're about, you know, prevention, all of these other services, I was shocked.
So since you actually worked at a Planned Parenthood, give us some sense of the relative number of abortions.
Okay. Abortions, Planned Parenthood provides over 330,000 abortions a year. They are the largest single abortion provider in our country.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org with me. I'm telling you right now, the Democrats are on a bender. The pro-union folks are on a bender. Some Republicans, too, sadly, but primarily Democrats and the National Labor Relations Board and everything else that Biden's trying to take over. And it's really, they're just going for broke on this thing, it seems like to me. So you've got all kinds of cases around the country. You've got, what, a California case going on, too?
Yeah, well, this was just filed. This is another Janus enforcement case. Janus v. Astme was the 2018.
So hold on a minute. I thought that you guys won Janus. Mm-hmm. I thought you guys won Janus and it was super clear and all done.
Well, it was, but that doesn't stop unions and especially in friendly states from trying to undermine it. And, you know, here we've got a really blatant violation. So this is a University of California lab assistant. And she, you know, decided she didn't like, for whatever reason, she didn't like what the union was doing with her money. And she said, okay, I want out. I heard about this Janus case. It says that I can no longer be required to fund a union as a government employee. And so I'm gonna stop. And not only did she stop, or did she say, I want out, she waited for the union dictated, quote, window period. That's a brief, I think, 15 a day window period that she had. And she filed during that. Now, we argue, and we've got all sorts of other cases talking about how those sort of window period, escape period restrictions violate Janus, because, of course, the union can't say, well, okay, we'll recognize your First Amendment rights, but only 15 days a year. That's not how the Constitution works. But setting that aside, she actually did ask out during that period. And what happened was the union waited till that period ended and then something back said, oh, sorry, we need a photo ID to stop the dues and for you to exercise your First Amendment constitutional rights, we're going to require a photo ID. And since you missed the period and now it's ended, you're going to have to wait till next year. So this is, you know, an extraordinarily blatant violation. And it comes out of California law. California is a particularly pernicious attempt to undermine the Janus precedent. What they did is they said, look, any government like HR person or management, if someone comes to you and says they want to stop dues or they want to exercise their First Amendment rights or they heard about Janus and they want out, you can't tell them anything except you need to talk to the union. And then when it comes to the payroll department in California, at the University of California or public schools or whatever government, agency and bureaucracy, they take whatever money the union says and they can't stop unless the union says it's okay. And so then you've got to go sue the union to exercise your First Amendment rights. And that's what's going on here. It's really ugly. It's really blatant. The only sort of upshot of that is that the more blatant it is, the more it catches the eyes of judges and you know, the Ninth Circuit, which is where California is generally not the most friendly to individual liberty. But because this is such a gross and blatant violation of what the Supreme Court said in Janus, hopefully it can be a vehicle for not only defending her rights and getting, you know, her dues stopped and the other workers who might have faced the same ID policy, but also maybe striking down that California law, which is, of course, at the root of all this. And it sort of outsources, First Amendment enforcement to the most biased party possible. I mean, it's the fox guarding the hen house. The idea that union officials are the ones responsible for making sure that they don't violate the rights of government workers by taking their money is, of course, sets up all the wrong incentives. And that's why you've got union officials telling people, we didn't tell you about the photo ID policy, but yeah, we have it. And better luck next year if you want to try and exercise your First Amendment rights.
Well, I commend this lab assistant, though, and I think that her heroic stand is going to really lead to other people going, hey, wait a minute, I want in on this, too, because I didn't really realize that I could do something about this. People aren't even aware of the Janus ruling enough. But her leadership's going to make a big difference, I hope.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, and we've got I think 30 ongoing Janus enforcement cases, and each one, it takes someone standing up. They may be they're obviously in a unionized workplace. I mean, she's at the University of California, and she's California government employee. There's probably a lot of pressure for her to not do this, but it's great when you have this kind of bravery. In this case, it follows the class action. So there are other people who presumably ran into the same issues. They may not have stood up and called National Right to Work and said, hey, I'm having this issue and I'd like you to file a lawsuit for me. But ultimately they could benefit from it because it is a class action. So the other individuals will get some assistance in cutting off their dues. And then, like you said, hopefully this leads to other people learning their rights, because you know, the way that California sets it up, you mentioned the word Janus, and the only thing that the person, you know, your government HR person can say is, oh, go talk to the union about that. I can't tell you anything. And it's, you know, it creates this.
Yeah, and the sad part for a lot of those people in HR or wherever else, they just don't want to get caught with their hand in the cookie jar and get sideways with the union either. So there's a lot of fear and kind of Gestapo tactics happening relating to that, too, and that's why nobody will touch it with a 10-foot pole, right?
Exactly.
All right. A couple other quick cases before we let you fly, Patrick. Metal worker wins settlement in case against sheet metal union boss for illegal $21,000 fine. This is a great one.
Yeah, this is, you know, this what happens. Unions go after any worker who challenges them. This is a guy who had a job, was a union member, found another job at a non-union shop that he thought was better for him, better for his family. And so he resigned from the union. He took this other position. And suddenly the union comes in and says, oh, you owe us $21,000 for supposed damages against the union because you took this this new position at a non-union contractor. And it's, I mean, you know, it was outrageous to begin with because as a non-member, they can no longer fine him and do that kind of thing. But on top of it, when they issued the fine, they issued it through the end of May. But they issued the fine, I think, in April or May, so that they were literally fining him for days that hadn't even occurred yet. So, you know, fortunately, he came to us. We were able to file something with the National Labor Relations Board. The union pretty quickly backed down and said, oh, we rescind the fine. The National Labor Relations Board investigated, and not only was the fine rescinded, which the union had already done, because they knew they were going to get caught for violating his rights. But they also did a settlement, which is basically how most of these National Labor Relations Board cases end. That means the union backed down. They had to put up a notice, inform other workers about their legal rights. But yeah, this is, you know, these are the types of tactics that union bosses use to attack any worker who kind of thinks independently or who, you know, might question them. You know, we see it all the time. We had a case up in Michigan. It's another sort of construction worker contractor, and he was in a union position, and then he went to work for his wife's company. His wife owned the company, so he went to work with his wife, a family business, and they said either force her to make that a union business or else we're going to fine you thousands and thousands of dollars. And so this is what this is a tactic union officials use. Now, the good news is they cannot legally issue these fines against workers who are not voluntary members. So the worker resigns, they're out of control of this sort of these internal kangaroo courts that that unions set up to go after independent minded workers. But it's a tactic, and they're hopeful that you know, maybe these people, if, you know, even if he successfully fights back, the next person, oh man, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to have to case to the National Labor Relations Board and hope they do the right thing. I'm just going to sit tight and pass up on an opportunity that might be what's best for their future and their economic well-being. So these are the
all right.
The
you probably don't have enough time for
we see.
You probably don't have enough time for this one, Patrick. But talk about the Chicago teachers really quick.
Right. So this is a case at the U.S. Supreme Court. It's it goes back to the Janus window period schemes that we were talking about. And this is asking the Supreme Court to strike one down that the Chicago Teachers Union has. And we got amicus support from 16 states. 16 attorneys general filed in favor of these teachers. They support their position. And that's a really big deal because it makes it more likely the Supreme Court is going to ultimately decide to hear this case and shut down these schemes once and for all. There you have it.
Thank you, Patrick. Sure appreciate it, sir. Godspeed.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Always great.
Liberty Roundtable Live.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Russia's ambassador to the United States said the Biden administration has asked for 24 Russian diplomats to leave the country when their visas expire on September 3rd. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen will provide an update to the House on Tuesday about the steps being taken to distribute $46.5 billion in federal funds that were allocated to prevent evictions during the pandemic. Election officials in Maricopa County, Arizona, issued a response to election audit subpoenas by the state Senate. In a letter on Monday, Maricopa Board Chairman Jack Sellers claimed the 2020 election was over. Arizona GOP Chair Dr. Kelly Ward said Sellers' response was unacceptable.
We are looking forward to the audit team processing the information that we must get from those new subpoenas. Voters deserve and demand a full audit shining a light on the good and on the bad in the 2020 election.
USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Alaroot for Patriot VPN. Patriot VPN is a virtual private network service that uses military-grade encryption to protect your internet connection on all of your devices. With Patriot VPN, your data and internet privacy is secure anywhere in the world. Why do you need Patriot VPN? Cyber criminals, government, even your own internet service provider collect and use your private information without your knowledge. Examples in the news recently, remember all the companies that have been hacked? Cuba censored the internet to kill protests? Here in America, conservative groups are being actively targeted. Your personal information and internet history is being sold by your ISP. It's all happening every day, but not with Patriot VPN. With Patriot VPN, your internet activity and history is protected from prying eyes forever. Patriot VPN is a veteran-owned business right here in the USA. For business or your family, starting at only $6.95 a month, use code WAR and get 3 months free. With an annual subscription, it's all at patriotvpn.com. That's patriotvpn.com.
More than 2,700 pages. Senators get to work on the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Dan Araki from the Ohio USA Radio News Bureau reports.
Senators began to dig into the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill on Monday after receiving the more than 2,700-page bill late Sunday night. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has pushed to get a vote on the bill done this week, while Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has called for a more measured period of debate and consideration. Senator James Lankford says he needs more time to digest the bill, but the Oklahoma Republican tells Newsmax TV that he wants to see an infrastructure bill that contains only projects that can be paid for.
Obviously, we need to do infrastructure. That's a given. We do infrastructure, but this is not just an infrastructure bill. This is the Biden team saying they want to do something historic, something that's never been done, to spend more on infrastructure that's ever been done. So it takes the normal infrastructure bill that we would do, which is about $400 billion, which is big, and then it tacks onto it all of these giant things that have no pay-fors on them at all.
USA Radio News.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we went to Freedom Fest. I did a bunch of interviews that we didn't get a chance to air. We're going to air one of them right now. We're talking about Braver Angels. Rick Kochner with us discussing it in detail. Here it is. All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live from Freedom Fest. The fun, the festivities, the hard work, the sacred cause of liberty marches on, ladies and gentlemen. It is day four, and there's still people everywhere. Breakout sessions going on. Our session with myself and Richard Mack on the general breakout stage coming up at 2:10 p.m. Busted. Is the justice system permanently broken? The answer is absolutely yes. Unless, and that's what I have to say at the event, you got to go or watch it online to find out what it is. I'll tell you after the fact later. How's that? Meanwhile, we're trying to come together in America. I know the mainstream press. I know your government. I know provocateurs are trying to divide Americans on every fault line they can find, but we're not going to let it happen on our watch. How's that? All right. With that in mind, Rick Kochner is with me, and Rick Kochner is an ambassador for BraverAngels.org. Braver Angels, kind of a cool concept. It's .org, not .com, so BraverAngels.org. And there's so much to this, it's hard to know where to start. But let me just start by saying this. It's a come-together site, right, Rick?
That's correct. It's about bringing people of different political perspectives together to depolarize our country.
Wow. So I really focus on this concept that I've kind of created, a clarion call for civility. And I'm working on a project with that, up and coming details, by the way. But in the meantime, though, this Braver Angels What do you become, a braver angel? Is that what you do?
Well, in practice, yes. But the way that we do this is we offer workshops that are free. You don't have to actually be a member to take a workshop. The workshops teach skills to have constructive discussions designed to facilitate understanding, find out what other people think and why, to see the humanity in each other, and to find common ground where it exists.
I dig it. Who started this thing?
So there are three men who are the co-founders. One is what we would call a blue, so a liberal. Another one is a red from Ohio.
What does the red stand for?
Red is for conservative,
it's
or
not
leans
communist?
Conservative.
Okay,
nope,
good.
Not communist,
right.
Interestingly, yes,
yeah.
But they, you know, after the states. And then the third is the one who actually has been the brains behind the workshops. He's a University of Minnesota professor named Bill Doherty, and he specializes in family planning. So
I've heard of Bill Doherty before.
Yeah, he testified at Congress a couple weeks ago about modernization of Congress. But he draws upon family therapy methodology to help our national family with the dysfunction that we have in our political discourse.
I like that. I think it's good work, and I appreciate it. Now, how did you become a Braver Angels ambassador, and what does that mean?
So, when my wife and I first found Braver Angels, we had already been talking about drawing upon our personal experience as a red-blue couple. She's liberal, I'm conservative.
Wait a minute. What does that even mean?
What does it mean to,
yeah.
Well, we're a married couple with political differences.
No, but I get that, but yeah. What do you mean by the differences, though? Are you really that divided?
We see things pretty differently, yes.
Now, the reason I say are you really that divided is because that's what America would like you to believe, right?
Yeah.
Are you really that divided? It's irreconcilable. You might as well get a divorce, right?
No.
Not true. I'm just saying,
not.
If you believe America's mainstream press, though,
right.
That's the bottom line, is there is no alternative.
Yeah, right.
The people at Braver Angels, though, are here to jettison that false narrative and tell the truth.
Correct.
So are you and your wife really that far apart?
We're far apart. I don't think we're that far apart, to be honest. We do have different views.
Sure, that's okay, though, right?
Right, it is. But we are very unified as Americans, and we're dismayed that people can't talk to each other.
And you're unified as a family and as a couple, right?
Yes, we believe good people can disagree.
Whoa, and you can do so agreeably?
Yes.
Wow, you still want to take her on a date?
Absolutely.
You don't want to say she's a never-Trumper and just jettison?
No, absolutely not.
I teased to make a point, though.
Yeah,
but first,
fair.
You got married, did you know you were marrying a liberal?
I did, yep.
And you were okay with it?
I was okay with that.
And have you been okay the whole time?
I've been okay with that the whole time.
Or has it got kind of harder?
No, it's not gotten harder. Our conversations have gotten better, actually, over time.
Really?
Yes.
How?
I would say that first of all, we were having conversations at the outset.
So hold on. Let me stop you. Yeah. I don't mean to just keep interrupting you, but okay. This is important, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You keep having conversations. When you keep having conversations, there's always a light at the tunnel. It's when you won't have conversations that you're in trouble.
That's correct. And that's why after the initial part of our marriage where we kind of avoided political discussions, we ended up having them. And I'll frankly say that she was better at them than I was, because she was focused on understanding me, and I thought I already understood her, so I wasn't really reciprocating. With Braver Angels, I've learned to focus more on understanding rather than trying to convince.
Ooh, I think you've just hit on the real thing. They say first this, try to understand before being understood.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what the takeaway is?
Absolutely. We lead with listening and curiosity and humility and not being too certain of ourselves.
How did you learn to do that? Did she teach you?
Well, she's modeled that. She was doing Braver Angels methodology for a long time before we found Braver Angels.
Really?
I've learned it in the course of the workshops and then employed it in the course of discussions with her and with other blues, like I said, so-called.
And did she know something, or did she just do it naturally, or what?
She's a diplomat, so I think it's naturally part of her personality to be able to draw people out in the way that she did. And she did it so well that I was convinced that I had convinced her of what I was saying. She didn't come back with any counterpoints or anything. She just wanted to understand.
Yeah, she just lets you believe what you believe there. And
absolutely.
I'll just let him think he's right.
Yeah.
Kind of an idea, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of the idea that if you change a man against, he'll still have the same opinion still, right?
Mm. Yep.
All right. So when you had these political discussions, give me an example of how dug in each of you were.
Well,
I don't want to really exploit the differences as much as what I'm trying to do is highlight some things that seem to be irreconcilable, and my goal is to discuss how you reconcile them. You may not change your opinion, but right. You can at least understand the other side. You can at least have respect for it, right?
I think that's the point, is that through these discussions, I can't say I've necessarily changed my mind about what my policy prescription should be.
Sure, and that's not the goal.
And that's not the goal. What I do have is a much better understanding, a much richer understanding of any given issue and the different perspectives on it, which puts me and whoever I'm talking to in a place to find common ground so that we can find alignments for solving problems.
Being an ambassador for this group, does that, I mean, is there money in that? How come you're ambassador? Is it a love of this? What is it?
It's almost an entirely volunteer organization. So the people that we're finding, which are really high quality, capable professionals, are passionate about this particular issue, about depolarizing our country. There's an understanding that what we're doing right now is not sustainable. We're driving people to extremes and we can't solve problems. And so there's an effort to build on the movement so that the grand majority of people who are people of goodwill, who are willing to consider other ideas and talk to people with whom they disagree, end up being the ones that aren't marginalized. It's the extremes that are marginalized.
And by extreme, they marginalize themselves, really.
Kind of, yeah. But to a certain extent, the political discourse we have right now, or lack thereof, is driving people to extremes, because when you have ideas shut down and people shut down, it's not like they go away. They just go to dark places. And that's what's happened over decades, I think.
Unfortunately, I agree. So what are some of the biggest issues you and your wife struggled with that now, hey, you've learned to kind of work through, and Braver Angels have helped kind of bridge that gap?
I think if you pick any number of sort of domestic issues is usually where we would disagree. Questions like abortion, questions like what's the right sort of level of government size and scope in terms of interfering in society or the economy or what have you. Interfering would be my word. Barbara would look at it, at government as something that should be a vehicle for change.
Yeah, I've got friends that simply say this: I'd rather give all my money that I work for to the government. I'd rather have them make sure everybody's good. Mm-hmm. And that's an extreme position on one hand, but on the other hand, is it really that they're bad people and they just want to be socialists and destroy everybody? Or is it that they really have a kind heart and they want others to do well?
I think this is one of the things that I'm finding. First of all, I would make a distinction between Democrat politicians and Democrat voters.
See that, and there's a huge difference there, huh?
I think so, but what I'm talking about is at the voter level, and the voters, I think, are people of goodwill who just see things differently than I do, but they still love America, they still want good, they still are in favor of the common good. They might understand that differently than me, but there is a lot of overlap, and that's one of the things I've found, and I think people that are involved in Braver Angels find, is that we really do have a lot more in common than we realize, and like you said earlier, there's people that are actively trying to disabuse us of that notion. They want us to think that we're divided.
And here's what I find interesting. A liberal and myself might be at polar ends of the spectrum, but you know what? We both want our neighbor to do well. We both want our neighbor to different races, different. Everybody wants to be pretty much left alone. They want to pretty much have all the benefits and the blessings of life. They want to go on vacation once in a while. They want to pay all their bills. They want to love their kids. They want to spend time together. They want to. And at the end of it all, we really all want almost the same things. Now, the reason I bring that up is I think that's the biggest getting together starting point we can find. The only discussion now is, hey, how do we go about it? And there might be vast differences, but if you realize at the core that we all really want the same things, that makes it human. That makes it normal. That makes it like, wait a minute, they're not so much different from me than I thought.
Absolutely. When we talk about finding common ground, if possible, we're not just talking about common ground on politics. There's all kinds of different ways of relating to each other, and there's all different ways of finding common ground as a result.
All right. I want to talk about the mission. The mission is to bring Americans together, to bridge the partisan divides and strengthen our democratic republic. Now, I could take issue with that and say, I think we have a constitutional republic, not a democratic republic, but I get it.
Yep.
And the idea is that we want to strengthen people. That's an important, critical mission. How many people are involved in the organization?
Tens of thousands. We grew about fourfold in 2020, I think, as a response to the polarization, and we've grown faster than
and
that.
And as a response to the COVID, too, because people are looking for ways to be involved with others, right?
Yes. And also, part of that is also that because we went to Zoom, we could actually reach more people. Generally speaking, the organization grew up organically through cities, and so more people who were not in cities could participate via Zoom when before everything was in person.
Rick Hotchner with me, ladies and gentlemen. He is a Braver Angels ambassador. Him and his wife, they both are. They're totally different from the political spectrum, but they're equally yoked as husband and wife. I find that intriguing. I find that full of hope. I find that encouraging. Now, here's the way the Braver Angels do things. They do it through workshops, as Rick mentioned. They also do it through debates and more. How do we make sure that it's not a brawl, that it's not a Jerry Springer, but it really is a decent discussion? A debate kind of has a little bit of the wrong connotation, because we're not trying to win brownie points that you might in high school in a debate. What we're really trying to do is flesh out discussions and really give the others the ability to kind of see it through our lens, right?
Sam, I couldn't have put it better myself. We have a resolution in our debates. You have people speaking for and against. Then the audience will participate, and they can ask questions to clarify. They can make statements of their own. Parliamentary rules are used to keep some structure to it and to keep some civility to it. But nobody's the point of the debate is not for one side or the other to win. The point of the debate is for everybody involved to leave a little bit smarter about that issue and to make up their own minds.
Not only smarter about the issue, not only able to make up your own minds, but to at least say, you know what, I completely disagree with you, but you know what? I think your side has some intelligence. I thought you were just a bunch of idiots before, and now I'm kind of realizing that, you know what, your side has really thought this through, and it's a little bit of respect for the other side, too, understanding that, hey, this is not just some yahoo ignorant person because they don't agree with me. Rather, it's a very well thought out, very well staked out position that has its values and its points. And just because you may not believe it's the answer, you can at least say, now I understand where you're coming from and why. And you know what? I disagree, but I have respect for it. And isn't that where we're trying to at least get to for a starting point?
Absolutely. That's exactly it.
All right. What's the difference between being a member, an ambassador, versus Sam Bushman just jumping on and having a debate with somebody?
Members and subscribers kind of get the same emails pushed out to them and other information. There's podcasts available and so on. To actively participate in an alliance, you need to be a member to take on a volunteer role as an organizer, an ambassador, a state coordinator. You need to be a member. It's a whopping $12 a year. We try to make all of this as accessible as possible to people. To be an ambassador, there's an orientation. It's a one-day orientation, actually a couple hours, 3 hours maybe. And then after that, you're just coordinating with your state coordinators before you do outreach to make sure that you're going out in ways that are productive. But if you want to be a moderator for a workshop, if you want to be a Zoom event manager, there's training that's provided so that people do all that in the Braver Angels way.
How do we make sure that people have the right intentions when they're there?
Anything that we do, thanks to Bill Doherty's work, has a particular structure to it that facilitates the kind of communication that we want. And then there's always moderators or people chairing discussions and so on that are making sure that people are acting accordingly. And really, for the most part, it's not needed. It's been very rare. I've never experienced it. I've heard about it. But it's pretty rare that somebody really steps out of line.
So let me ask you this, because it seems like in America, certain groups are okay to disagree with, but yet they're still at the seat. They still have a seat at the table. Then there's groups that aren't and don't. Let me give you an example. I believe that abortion is killing babies, and I believe it's, you know, pro-death, not pro-choice. That's just my belief. Others would say, Sam, you know, I don't see it that way. I get it. But you know what? The abortionists are still welcome at the table, so are the pro-life people, right? But if you talk about race, if somebody advocates for the Latino race or the African-American race, then they're okay. But if a white guy says, I want to advocate for the white race, man, that guy's a racist. He's not even welcome to sit at the table. In fact, don't even give that guy table scraps. Now, don't get me wrong. I disagree with his views, but I still say he's an American and has his right to his beliefs as anybody else does. Are there any lines about where you got to be or not be to participate?
I've not seen any, no. In fact, we have emphasized, first of all, we have organized events that are on topics that are very controversial. For example, you know, what happened with the election, and some people didn't like those because they felt like people who were beyond the pale shouldn't be able to participate. But we held those events anyway.
I think those who think there's no vote fraud are beyond the pale, but I'm still willing to be kind to them.
Well, right.
Joke because it's the opposite, right?
The point is that that, as I said before, if you, and Braver Angels believes this, if you shut people down and you shut down their ideas, It doesn't mean that they go away in a benign way. They go to a darker place. The idea is that we want to keep as many people in the fold as possible engaged in our political discourse so they're not going to dark places. And so, nobody is off limits. And if people want to raise issues, they get to raise issues and explain why they believe what they believe. They also, should expect that they might get questions in a civil way, asking them to explain further what they believe.
And this is all provided that, hey, no matter what your beliefs are, that you're willing to follow the protocols, the civility, the guidelines of the platform, right?
Correct.
All right. This is a very unique new social media venture, isn't it?
We're online right now. There's social media aspects to it, but I think it's relatively new. It started in 2016. There are a lot of people, I think, operating in the space of trying to depolarize our country. What I think is unique about us is that we actively teach the skills for it and then give people opportunities to use those skills. It's also, we are in all 50 states. It's a grassroots movement that's growing. I think that's also the size of what we're doing and the scope of it are also somewhat unique.
And the workshops are primarily the training grounds, and then the debate forums really are kind of like, say, hey, you've learned these skills in the workshop, now let's practice them.
Correct.
All right, I dig it. Do people get married on this thing?
We've only been around since last December, and I've not heard of anybody getting married, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happens.
Yeah, because people kind of go, whoa, you know what?
These are powerful experiences that people are having when they actually are able to sit down and talk to somebody with whom they disagree and see it go okay. And so I can see how, you know, that kind of an experience could lead to, people courting. I was talking to somebody last night who one of our workshops is called a red-blue workshop. This guy, when he did one, there were six reds, six blues, and ever since they did that workshop, every month they get together and talk about issues and so on. So, there, you know, I've done two one-on-one conversations and have developed friendships out of those with the blues with whom I've spoken.
Now, it's easy to see that this would work well for polarizing issues. What about issues that aren't really very dividing? Do people use it for just common discussion groups as well?
I haven't seen it specifically used for that. I think part of what we're trying to do is when we pick issues to discuss, we want to pick ones that are somewhat where there are differences because we think it's important to apply the skills and the practices to things that are going to be challenging. But I think the nice thing about what's taught is that it's applicable for any issue and it's applicable even in other parts of life.
Is it worldwide or is it just United States discussions?
Like I said, there's a presence in all 50 states, and some of the people that are members are in other countries.
I see, but it's primarily an American idea at this point.
It's an American idea, but expats in other countries are involved.
All right, I see a headline. Braver Angels goes to Washington. Tell me about that.
So that was Bill Doherty going and talking to the House Committee on Modernization. So there's a group of Republicans and Democrats that are charged with trying to make Congress run better so that they could better serve our country and their respective constituents. And Bill was one of four people who testified. Another one was Amanda Ripley, who talked about her book, High Conflict. I don't remember the other two offhand, but Bill really gave them a concrete set of suggestions for things that congresspersons and their staffers could do to lower the temperature in the House and be able to cooperate better together to solve problems.
I'm going to call this incredible program you guys are working on braverangels.com. I'm going to call it what's that?
.org.
Oh yeah. Wait, did they change? Every time I type this in, it changes it to .com on my computer. Sorry.
No worries.
BraverAngels.org. I'm going to call this thing Operation Get Along.
I like it.
What do you think?
I like it, yeah.
What about topics such as environment? Do we talk about that kind of stuff, too?
Sure.
Are people debating, going, I love to just spew into the environment, everybody else is like, no, you got to stop?
I think people tend to be more thoughtful than that, but yes, there are debates about climate change and other things like that.
Because I got 8 kids, and I know they say I'm just ruining the environment, and right. Are you going to let me talk on there?
I've got 2 kids who think very differently than me on such questions, and
they
actually
think like your wife, huh?
I'm sorry?
They think like your wife?
No, they're actually more to the left than my wife is.
Oh, wow.
But we've actually already started to have better conversations than we were having before. In fact, that wasn't hard, probably, because the conversations before were rows. They weren't conversations, but we've got off on a better foot now.
Part of having a good conversation is not taking offense from the start. Is that part of the training? Because you know what? I can say something, and if somebody knows that I'm very ultra, I mean, I make the most conservatives look liberal, right? But they're going to start out thinking, oh my gosh, here's Sam Bush, when this guy's crazy. He's over the top. They're already going to take offense by my first words. Is there any effort to say, hey, we got to work on dropping your defenses first? This is not an attack. It's not meant to be, even though you might be trained and triggered to think so. It's not. And we got to start by thinking that it's not and giving the argument, the discussion, a chance to develop.
I think generally speaking, there is an effort to have everybody just keep the temperature down. But there's more of an emphasis on speaking in a way where you're not going to cause that kind of a reaction in somebody else. We start with listening, but then we also talk about how to convey your own views in a way that's not off-putting.
All right. Do you think that this group, you know, you've heard of like the Council on Foreign Relations and stuff like
sure.
that, right?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm not here to debate that. I'm here to say, though, do you think at some point this forum could eventually be some kind of a group by which we could incubate things that go beyond discussions to, say, legislative agendas that could satisfy many people and kind of have a tempering effect on extreme legislation brought forward?
So what I would say is, first of all, that Braver Angels doesn't take policy positions as an organization. But what we are doing is, you know, for example, with Bill going to Congress, we are engaging legislatures such as Congress and around the country, people who are representatives, their staffs, trying to help them do a better job of working with each other to produce better legislation. So we're having that kind of an impact, but I suppose it's kind of indirect. Ultimately, it's still up to the representatives and their staffs to do the work.
Is this just a website, or is it an app too?
It's just a website as far as I know.
All right. Hopefully they'll build an app. That's easier for people too. On the website, then, is it always Zoom? Is some of it text, chat? Is it always video? Tell me how the forums work.
So the workshops and the events are all Zoom right now. Before the pandemic, there were in-person workshops and other events, and we'll get basically moved to a hybrid approach because Zoom has allowed us to reach more people than we could before, allowed more people to engage than could before. Part of our emphasis is on people at the community level being able to work together to solve problems. So we want to enable that by being able to have in-person events for them.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Hotchner with me. Him and his wife are both Brave Angels ambassadors. That means they reach out, they try to get people onto this concept to understand it and to be involved in it in meaningful ways to help try to bring people together. Civility is the goal. Respect and appreciation is the goal. Jettisoning all the divides in America on every fault line is the goal. And I think it's a worthy concept, to say the least. To learn more, braverangels.org. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks so much, Sam.
You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Incredible interview. You know, I've been preaching civility. I've had a clarion call for civility for quite some time now, since 2015. These guys got started in 2016. I guess bright minds think alike. All I'm telling you is they're wonderful people. And it's very interesting to see people really work on a civil way to agree to disagree, to understand and try to, you know what? First, listen. Try to understand before speaking and trying to be understood. It's kind of the idea a little bit here. And I commend them for their work. And believe it or not, we're going to have somebody on tomorrow from Braver Angels as well, talking about an event they have coming up they want to highlight. And I said, you know what? Call me whenever you have events, and we'll highlight them. So they'll jump on for 5 or 10 minutes with us. Becky Akers should be with me tomorrow for 2 hours, obviously. But we'll have these people jump on really quick and update you on the event. So stay tuned for that, okay? BraverAngels.org, doing a great job. Rick Kochner and crew, man, we appreciate them. And we appreciate the initiatives that we're all working on to bring a little bit of a dial it all back, if you will. It's kind of, you know what, have a little respect for one another. Let's bring back the traditions of America. We can agree to disagree, and we can do it agreeably. We can work together in ways that are meaningful and productive, even if we don't see things the same. That's the genius of the greatest country on the face of the earth, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you right now. Thanks for being alongside with Orion. I declare this nation shall endure. LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net, our websites. Check it out. Donate liberally, would you please? It's the only time we believe in liberalism, you know what I'm saying? All right. Well, without further ado, God save the Republic of the United States of America.